It's 6 minutes now after 9 o'clock, and we have very special company here with us in Studio B at Classical IPR. Leslie Tai is here, instructor of film and screenwriting here at the Interlochen Arts Academy. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being, this is rather a little on the early-ish for you, I think.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. Nine o'clock. It's a decent human hour
yeah.
this morning. Now, Leslie, you have been a screenwriting professor here at Interlochen for quite a while.
Yes, I started in 2002.
Oh, wow. That is a while.
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen many graduating classes come and go.
I have, yes.
Wow, that's got to be strange. Turning out artists right and left.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are talking about film scores today, and you've got some wonderful music for us. Before we start listening, though, I would love to try to keep in mind a framework here. When you're working with your film students, I know that you do script writing, but surely you talk to them about scores and how those work with films. Are there do's and don'ts, or are there things they specifically need to focus on when they're thinking about scoring their films?
Well, you know, our students, they work really closely with the composition students at Interlochen. Typically, they are their composers. And I think what's important for them is to not, you know, I think it's more about the collaboration between the filmmaker and the musician and
oh.
really talking very from the beginning, before even the film is shot, really talking about the kind of music that they want, the feel of the music, the tone of it. I think that it's important that they're not using the music to kind of try to sway certain emotions, so keeping away from saying, you know, well, this is the really sad moment, so it should be sad music, but instead really thinking about, you know, the story, really having it come from the story.
Wow, so less directly manipulative and something more substantive.
Yes, right. And so thinking about the different characters, whether characters are going to have particular themes to them, you know, thinking about the different storylines and what themes, you know, might be woven in. And so I think that a lot of times what will happen with our students is they'll just think, oh, we'll just do it at the end. At the very end when the film is done, then you give it to the composer. But it's really important that they're in that process from the very beginning.
Okay. So it's more organic and that the two things are very one.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're trying things out as they're editing the film.
All right. Oh, that's fascinating. And we're going to hear a couple of very distinct examples of that,
yes.
I think, today that I'm pretty excited for. Tell us about this first piece. This is From a Single Man.
Yes. So this is From a Single Man. What I noticed about this movie, it was more visual when I saw it. The music really complements it really well. They use color in this film to colors associated with the main character's feelings, with his emotions. So they're throughout most of the film, it's very desaturated. And then there's these moments where he's really just pulled by his emotions, and this color just suddenly saturates on screen, like right in front of your eyes.
Oh.
I'd never seen this done in a film. And so then as I watched it more and more and started listening to the music, I was seeing how the music was also kind of doing that, how the music is, as those emotional moments are happening, the music is getting more, you know, more complex, more interesting. It's just playing along with that. So that's why I chose this particular piece.
Thank you.
So that was A Stillness of the Mind.
Wow, you could really hear the blooming in that music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exactly what it is like visually, is it blooms. The color just blooms to life.
Wow. And, you know, that's very impressionistic, musically speaking.
It is, yes.
This is the one of the places where, when people ask us, where are the composers going to go? Where are all your composing students, where are they going?
Mm-hmm.
This is where so many of them are going, and that's a real piece of work that you're hearing there. You never notice sometimes because you're in the movie and you're swept away.
Exactly.
You know, so it's good to take some time and isolate with the music of a film. But now, this next piece of music I'm particularly excited about, and I think this is a great way of describing film and music that are completely intertwined.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
Yes. Yes, so this is from Amelie, and I picked this again because it absolutely captures the essence of the film and the essence of the character, the whimsy of it and the fun of it. So that's why I picked this particular piece.
Yeah, I think these two, again, are so entwined. I can't think of the film Amelie without thinking of the music, and I cannot hear the music without seeing the film.
Absolutely, yeah, and the way it... when you hear the music, I definitely start to imagine all the color again and all the fun characters in this film. So that is composed by Jan Tiersen, and that's a great example of, you know, kind of this, that is a theme for Amelie, for the character of Amelie, and it comes back throughout, and there's tons of different instrumentations, too, throughout the whole film of that same kind of theme.
And it really speaks to who she is, which is interesting that they can pull that off with just a piano. She's a very whimsical person, but she feels pain.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
She has the melancholy to go with the giant brown eyes, you know.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Now, Leslie, you have a really interesting thing that, a position that you hold. You held a panel recently on scripts as literature, and that's yes. whether or not it was ever made into a film.
Right, yes.
Screenplays as literature. Can we talk about that a little bit? I just think that's a fascinating idea, and I'm surprised that it has to be new now.
Right. It's interesting. But, you know, the screenplays are interesting in that film actually technically came before the screenplay because, you know, films, the first cameras were invented and people were just kind of shooting what they saw and, mm-hmm. and kind of vaudeville acts and, you know. And it wasn't until they started telling longer stories that they realized they needed something to organize the stories and scripts. They started as shot lists and then they became more and more complicated. But there's this been movement historically towards a more kind of literary version of the screenplay, meaning that writers aren't just writing shots and camera movement and these things, but they're actually trying to use language to do that, to make it more fun to read. Mm. And so the idea is that you're writing something that's meant to be read, and hopefully it's to the reader then can imagine exactly what the movie would look like and sound like. And I just am a big believer in looking at screenplays and literature. I would love them to be in, you know, English classrooms across, you know, across the world. I think that they're just as plays, just as stage plays, are looked at as literature, and they actually examine the characters and examine the language, you know, of the dialogue. That screenplays, that can be done as well. I also just kind of thought, well, of course, screenplays are literature, but I kind of found that not everybody sees them that way.
Yeah, you know, it's not something I'd ever really thought about. And then you think about it, well, of course they should be, but I wonder, oh, wow, that's yeah. really cool.
And, you know, there's a lot of screenplays, really amazing screenplays that are written mm-hmm. out there that never get produced. So does that mean that they're not, you know, a value, that they're not an artistic piece in themselves? I don't think so.
Right, just because they weren't picked up by Hollywood, that right. doesn't mean they weren't written by a writer.
Right, exactly, you know? And oh. don't have some beautiful writing in it, so...
Oh, that is just fascinating. So keep your eyes out more. Screenplays as Literature from Leslie Tai. And we'll see if we can't help her champion that cause. Now, in some instances, I think the film score is as popular, if not more popular, than the film
mm-hmm.
itself.
Yes.
And I think that's definitely, and it comes up with our next piece.
Yes. Yeah, this is Peter Gabriel's score for The Last Temptation of Christ. And I actually found out about this movie when I was in high school because I just loved Scorsese. I got obsessed with Scorsese for some reason. But yes, definitely this movie was controversial and wasn't necessarily much of a hit for Scorsese. But the score has kind of lived on and is really amazing.
Thank you.
So that was Peter Gabriel's With This Love.
That is, and those last few notes, actually, those last eight bars, I think, are really iconic there, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating, Leslie, how a pop performer like Peter Gabriel, who you'd think of as rock songs, you know, how he can sit down and reach down deep and pull out something like this. And it's maybe it's a way for rock musicians to expand their boundaries further. But there's a little bit of that also with our next composer who has done maybe at this point more film scores than he did rock albums. What do you think?
I think so. He's done a ton. I mean, as I was looking around at all his stuff, I didn't even realize some of the films that he had scored. So, and that's Danny Elfman.
Yay. Yes, I love Danny Elfman.
Yep, I picked a few selections from him. Also to kind of showcase, I think he's known always for his kind of Tim Burton kind of films, but he's done so much more than that. And what I think is amazing about him is that you can instantly kind of recognize kind of his signature music, but at the same time he does very, very different types of music, mm-hmm. or very different types of films that he scores.
Yeah, you know it's Danny Elfman right away, but it doesn't sound the same for every piece.
Exactly, exactly.
So I think we're hearing two Danny Elfmans. Oh, several, actually.
Danny Elfmans. Three very different Danny Elfmans.
Fantastic. Let's talk about the first one.
So the first one is from Big Fish, and this is actually a film. Oh.
Oops. Okay.
Perhaps. Yes, I lied. The first one is from, it wasn't on my list here. That's right. The first one is from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, actually. That was the last one we added. So Pee-wee's Big Adventure is the first one. Yes?
Yes.
And that is very iconic. I think a lot of people recognize that song, and it's really fun.
Thank you.
So that was The Overture and The Big Race from Pee-wee's Big Adventure by Danny Elfman.
What a distinct sound.
Yes.
You know, and it sounds, now in that instance, though, we're going to hear something different. In that, don't you hear instantly mischief afoot?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Pee-wee is all about fun and mischief and doing fun things, and absolutely the score captures that.
But then we go in a completely different direction for this next one.
Right, for Big Fish. So this is Big Fish, Danny Elfman's score, and, you know, this is a kind of mixing of the real world with this kind of fantastical fantasy world.
Thank you.
that was Big Fish, but now we're going to hear something completely different, again from Danny Elfman, though, which is from Silver Linings Playbook. Right. So I love in that score how he mixes, you know, the instruments and the human voices, too, to kind of create the full sound of it.
Yeah, that adds a lot of whimsy and thoughtfulness to it. It sounds like a bunch of Sufjan Stevens singing
right.
together there.
Exactly, it does.
But such different sounds. So, I mean, we start out with this, you know, bomp, bomp, bomp with the peewee.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear the chimes. Those are always the Danny Elfman child,
right.
chimes of childhood wonder or whatever. Those chimes then moved into Big Fish. So he used them there. But then he adds this fiddle and this kind of nostalgic, very American sound.
Absolutely.
And then moves that again into just a completely different bent here.
Right, right.
Wow. So again, just one person composing all of those three things. He's somebody who seems to really get the symphony of the film.
Yes, absolutely.
Again, that's carrying that idea all the way through, just as our composers did now. Beethoven has a theme. He's going to stick with it, and
mm-hmm.
he's going to show it in important places, and he has to think about the whole work and how it all fits together.
Exactly, right. All the different moments, all of the different, you know, emotional beats.
Mm-hmm. Ways that so many of us just are not used to thinking about that.
Right.
You know? Well, what other deliciousness do you have for us, Leslie? This is great.
So this next one is, again, very different. This is actually It's technically not really a film score. It was actually inspired by a film, but it's now played often with a film. Inspired by the film The Passion of Joan of Arc, which is a silent film, actually, from Carl Theodor Dreyer. And so this kind of libretto was created in response and reaction, and it pairs extremely well with the film. It's just beautiful. That was Richard Einhorn's Voices of Light, which again was written in 1994, but inspired by the 1928 The Passion of Joan of Arc.
And then inspired by many, many centuries previously.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yes. The story of Joan and how she was persecuted and burned at the stake.
Yeah, I always just think it's fascinating to hear modern composers writing in that old idiom.
Absolutely.
Really neat. And of course, many composers now are doing that, taking old silence and writing scores for them. There's a couple of great ones for Fritz Lang's Metropolis and some really neat scores out there. Now, this next one, I love this. This next piece that you're playing, well, so many people just adore this song.
Right.
I have to tell you, this is the only song that Audrey Hepburn ever actually sang in one of her films. It was Marnie Nixon did all the rest of Audrey Hepburn's singing, so this is the only thing she really sang.
Yes, this is true. And this particular piece has a big meaning to me, too, because it connects to a play that I did last year, The Little Dog Laughed. This was a really important piece, you know, about beautiful things in life and, you know, wanting and wishing for those beautiful things. So this is Moon River from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Moon River, crossing you in style someday. Oh, dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way. To drifters off to see the world, there's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbow's end, waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend.
That was Henry Mancini's Moon River.
Moon River. I love that. My huckleberry friend. Mm-hmm. I think I'm missing one of our next pieces, so we may have to skip the next one and move down one.
All right.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
We will find it. But that, again, so iconic. Everybody loves it. I love, in that one, he's got that mix of Spanish with the guitar and then the harmonica, which suddenly makes it hugely American.
Right.
You know, that's great. Now, our next composer, this is somebody we have kind of a set of work here, although I am going to try and find that other missing piece as well, so we will keep our eyes out for that. But let's talk a little bit about our next composer and his work. He's somebody similar to Danny Elfman in that he's done a lot of work on a lot of different films.
Right. Well, yeah, this is Nathan Johnson, and he is... cousin to Ryan Johnson, who is a filmmaker, and he's definitely a more recent composer, though. But he has done all of Ryan Johnson's films, and also, again, kind of works in the pop, kind of rock world, too. And so we have a couple examples of some of his themes from a couple different movies. The first one is from Brick, which was his first film and Ryan Johnson's first film, and it's Emily's theme, one of the characters. It's her theme and kind of what opens up the whole film. It's really interesting.
Thank you.
That was Emily's theme from Nathan Johnson.
Now, what kind of person is Emily that is her music?
Well, Emily is kind of, she is the character that the whole mystery is about.
Uh-huh.
So she's mysterious. And okay. And what's neat, yeah, he used a lot of kind of created instruments for that particular score, kind of homemade instruments and
things.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Neat.
And the next one is Penelope's theme. This is from The Brothers Bloom, which is Ryan Johnson's second film. And again, it's a theme for a particular character, but it's a little bit different. Theme.
So what type of person is Penelope with that theme?
Penelope is, she's actually one of those characters that kind of seems to be one thing, and as you discover, she's much more complicated than you think.
Oh,
you know, she's kind of the love interest, and she kind of seems like this. She's kind of a little bit bumbling, a little bit kind of like things out of her control, but then you kind of find out that maybe things aren't quite out of her control the end.
Nice. That little bit of cello and that melancholy, that's that Amelie hit again.
Yes. It is similar. Yes.
Yeah, tells you there's somebody really deep to think about.
Right.
Now, Leslie, you have a really cool project coming up. You've been working on this for a very long time. Now, this is the kind of one of the rules with art. Once you know the rules, like you do,
mm-hmm.
then you can break them and go totally abstract.
Right.
So talk about how you've been breaking the rules lately. This is just great.
We've been breaking the rules by kind of mixing things up and doing some parodies with a twist. So what we've done is I wrote the script for a play, and it is a mashup of How the Grinch Stole Christmas with The Who's Tommy. So it's How Grinchy Met the Who, and we've literally really mashed those things together. I mean, the characters are at once kind of the Seuss characters, but they're also characters from the world of Tommy or from the band The Who themselves. And so we're definitely breaking a lot of rules,
I'm sorry,
but in a fantastic way.
Back and forth. Acid Queen, Christmas.
Yes.
Kimbo Wizard, Christmas.
That is exactly what it is, yes. So I found actually that it works really well, that both Tommy, you know, he is kind of isolated from the world, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. nobody understands him, and he doesn't really understand everybody else. And Grinch, the same thing. He's isolated from the Whos. He's up in his cave. He just doesn't understand. And in our version, he doesn't understand music. Is what the tie-in is there. So when he starts to finally understand the music, that's when he finally can kind of join society.
Okay. And you can't join society until you can really feel the music.
That's right.
That's
absolutely
right. That's what makes you human. Now, we're going to hear a really cool recording now that is Tommy-based.
Yes. Yes. This is the London Symphony Orchestra. Yes. And they did a whole version of Tommy with some of the original artists as well.
So what are we going to hear specifically? Do you want to do the Daltrey or the Townsend?
Let's do the Daltrey.
Okay.
So this is I'm Free.
Told you what it takes to reach the highest high. You'd laugh and say nothing's that simple. But you've been told many times before Messiah's pointed to the door, but no one had the guts to leave the temple.